Steve, thanks. Hi, it's Bill. It's Wendy. Welcome to the show. Just a quick review, if we can. And Steve, stay close because I want to make sure that I get all this right. We just heard part of the press conference there in Wisconsin, in Barron County, Wisconsin. Miraculously, the girl who was missing, was abducted a couple of months ago, was found alive yesterday, much to the shock of almost anybody following the story. We all certainly hoped that that would be the end result, and it
didn't
is.
Didn't think it was. No, I was shocked.
It was amazing.
And yeah. Thankful. Seriously.
You know, I only know this from watching television shows, but they always say that whenever somebody's missing, every day matters, every hour matters. The longer somebody's missing, the more likely it is that the end is not going to be what you're hoping for. And it's just, it is miraculous that she was found and she's alive. So at the press conference, they divulged the fact that the suspect in this case is a man who's 21 years old. His name is Jake Patterson. He's a Wisconsin resident. Steve, I didn't hear them say that there was any connection between Mr. Patterson and the Kloss family. Did
well,
you?
He said, in fact, he said there was no contact. So that's one of the things that will have to be clarified, I think, because he said there was no contact. I'm assuming he meant, you know, previous contact.
Right.
But he also said that Jamie was the only target. So that implies that he did go to that house intentionally with the idea of abducting,
of kidnapping her,
Jamie. Hopefully we'll learn more about that. There's still, we broke away because there are a series of other prosecutors talking, and
yeah.
I don't think we're going to get much in as far as question and answer. They're going to do it again this afternoon and probably get a few more details then.
So the questions that had come up prior to them finding her yesterday and then bringing in Patterson for questioning, people wanted to know exactly that, if there was a connection between, a previous connection between he and either the parents or the daughter. We still don't know if there was any sexual misconduct in the past few months. That was not brought up at all, was it?
No, it was not. And he was not charged with that. He was charged with kidnapping.
All right. So are we led to believe by what was said that his intent there was to just abduct her, that the murders were a byproduct of the fact that her parents were home and he didn't expect that, or was that not an issue?
I don't want to do too much jumping to conclusions, but that seems to be what they were implying. If what they're saying was Jamie was the quote-unquote only target, that's what it seems to be, Bill.
So, Steve, in a case like this, she's so young. She's 13, correct?
13, yes.
All right. So how, what happens over the next couple of weeks or months? How do they reassign her to her life? You know, it'll never be the same, obviously. Her parents were murdered. But what do they do next with her?
I don't know. I mean, I think it will be
lots of therapy.
A long road.
It's got to be.
I don't know what sort of family she has surviving up there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be a very difficult time. I mean, I think of Elizabeth Smart, right?
Yes, I was just thinking of her.
And I met her actually a couple years ago, and she, you know, is doing
for her
well.
Book.
But she was for a book. We were doing a speaking engagement at the same place. But she was held for a good deal longer as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost amazing that anyone thinks, and I know that we're dealing with troubled minds here, but that anyone thinks they can get away with something like this. And sadly, there are times where you do get away with something like this, but you would just think with modern crime-solving techniques that the chances would be so slim.
Well,
I don't think you think about getting caught sometimes.
But, Bill, I agree with what you're saying, but that's not what led to the end of this case.
Right.
You know, she escaped.
Right.
And had she not, who knows how long it might have lasted.
I can't wait to hear the details of how she actually escaped and why now, and was he getting, you know, lazy with his apprehension skills where she was able to sneak away.
Yeah.
God, I'm so thankful she did.
So the person who found her, or that she had approached, said that there were signs up all over town with this girl's picture on it. So that was a contributing factor to this being solved, right?
Well,
you always wonder.
And she said, I mean, wasn't this woman walking her dog? And she said, hey, this is who I am. I need help. Please.
Yeah. Yeah.
The other thing is, I'm interested in finding out, and I haven't heard yet, just where she was being held.
Right.
Because the sheriff said that she escaped and that the car was stopped nearby. So I don't know.
The car leading us to believe that she got in a car and drove away? Or?
Well, the car with the Jake Patterson's car was spotted nearby. So I don't know if he lives nearby where she escaped, or if she escaped from a car when she was being transported. You know, that's one of the things we'll have to find out.
They had said that there would be an update at, I think, 4 o'clock later on today, right, Steve? Is that correct?
Yes. Right.
And where did they find him? Did they say that? There are not very many.
No, I think it was nearby. That's the thing. I think he...
Outside of his house. It's not like they went and apprehended him at his home.
Yeah.
I'm asking.
It's not clear to me. Oh, okay. I mean, they said deputies spotted the car that was described by Jamie close by. So yeah. I don't know that. I'm not certain about that, Wendy.
All okay. right, so that's what we know at this hour. Like I said, there will be an update later on today. They said 4 p.m. Central Time, so hopefully we'll get more answers then. But the end result is, I mean, it was so unlikely. I always thought that they would find her alive, and thankfully that was the case. So if there's some good news in that, there it is. We'll take a break, and then there's more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill, it's Wendy. Yesterday about this time, we would have been mid-interview with travel expert and marijuana proponent Rick Steves, but there was a scheduling snafu.
Right.
So he
showed up, actually, on Steve Bertrand's
yeah.
business lunch.
How did that happen?
How did that happen?
It's pretty funny, because when we said that we had him on, he's like, I was trying to get him, and then lo and behold, I think Steve Bertrand sabotaged.
Oh, Steve would never do that.
Sabotage.
You're right.
Never do that.
No.
So he's going to be at the travel show this weekend, and we're going to talk to him at 11:30 today. He's just been rescheduled. Did you warm him up for us yesterday, Steve?
Actually, I told him to call you tomorrow at 12:15.
Oh, so nice of you. Yeah. So nice of you.
We're also going to talk television with Decider.com's Alexander Zalbin. That's coming up later in the day as well.
Mm-hmm.
I got an alert. I was watching Black Klansman last night. It's a great movie. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed it. I like Spike Lee. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the alert about Jamie Kloss, who was found.
Yeah.
And I hate to pull myself out of a movie, but I have my phone with me all the time, and I had to pause to read it and see the great news.
Uh-huh.
I also got an alert that there was an alleged confession about the JonBenet Ramsey murder. So that, of course, piqued my curiosity. This is something that I really did lose sleep over when this happened how many years ago?
I don't know, 15 years ago?
It's been a long time. And I just want to know the truth. I know her mother was accused at one point. Patsy has since died.
Her brother was a suspect.
Her father.
And I think her brother just successfully sued. Was it CBS? It was one of the networks.
Yeah.
For alleging that he was the murderer.
Right. Well, now this has just been released as of yesterday. Police in Boulder, Colorado appear to be dismissing a man's alleged confession to JonBenet Ramsey's murder. The DailyMail.com reported on Thursday yesterday that 54-year-old Gary Oliva admitted in letters obtained by the tabloid to killing JonBenet by accident. But the Boulder Police Department released a statement afterwards saying it appears to refute claims made by the convicted pedophile, who has made similar confessions in the past.
Is he the one that they... Years ago, there was a guy in another country who insisted he did it.
I don't think this is the same guy. He was one of the early suspects in the Ramsey case. The convicted sex offender may have been close to the Ramsey home on the night of the murder. When he was arrested on other charges back in 2000, police found a photo of JonBenet in his possession.
Mm-hmm.
But he's currently in jail.
He is.
And he had written a letter to a high school friend saying that he had an obsession with her and that it was an accident. It's very disturbing, and I wondered what was going to become of it, and now you're seeing that Boulder police are not necessarily taking his confession to be true.
What's in it for these guys? And we don't know yet if this guy did it or didn't do it. It doesn't look like he did it.
He's currently behind bars for a 2016 child porn case. Court documents show Oliva downloaded 22 separate sexually explicit images. All of the photos show children under 10 years of age. And I don't know, is this like a scream for attention, for giving him some notoriety?
Well, several people have come forward over the years and claimed that they did this, but I can't imagine what they could possibly get out of it. If what you said is true,
that's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah, I guess. But is that the kind of notoriety? I mean, I know we're dealing again with troubled minds who aren't thinking clearly. But what could you possibly get out of that if you did it or if you didn't do it to try to set people up to believe you did it? It doesn't make any sense.
I want to tell people that I invented Amazon, but no one believes me.
That's fair.
Go for good things, not, you know, not infamous stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is their next step with this guy? What do they do to try to figure out if he is telling the truth in this case or not? He was a suspect in the past, and they decided he didn't do it.
Right, but he's currently in jail, so I believe that they can take their time because it's not like he's going anywhere.
Right.
And again, just big news this morning, Jamie Kloss, she was kidnapped October 15th. As each day went by, it didn't look good.
Right. A texter says what you get out of it is the fact that you're infamous forever.
Right.
That's why you do it until they prove that you didn't do it. Right. If you're one of those people who are coming across and saying, yeah, that particular crime, that was my handiwork. And then somebody backs it up and goes, no, we can clearly show that you didn't do it. You're not getting anything out of that.
Yeah, but you know, Bill, it seems like so much news is coming out there fast and furious that a lot of people, including myself, get confused as to what has happened.
Right.
So if he gets this notoriety, you know, 10 years from now, are you thinking, oh, that guy came out and... But didn't he dispute it?
But we can't remember the names. Like I said, other people have come forward, especially in this case. We've had several people come forward over the years and say that they did it. I can't remember any of their names. Can you?
So, because they didn't do it.
Right. The person who did do it, they would get, I hate to use the word credit, but they would get the notoriety. And that's not a good thing.
No.
Horrible.
But here's my question, and again, this is just me being naive. Is there a good chance this will never be solved? Because I don't believe that. I don't believe that.
I think there's a great chance it'll never be solved. It's just one of those cases that, I mean, at the time they were blaming local police, saying they were ill-equipped to handle it and stuff. And maybe that's true and maybe it isn't true. But look at all these years later, are they any closer to solving it? And then they had that special... A couple years ago, the one that her brother sued. I keep wanting to say CBS. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry, but I'm almost positive it was CBS. So they led you to believe, if you watched that it was the brother. And of course, he's not too happy to hear that. So that's why the legal action. But yeah, I think
it was CBS.
It was
Burke.
CBS. Yeah.
He reached a settlement with them.
Yeah.
It was a $1 billion lawsuit. Wow.
I don't think that's what they settled for. It was in the millions.
No. But that's what he went for.
Yeah.
Well.
But the fast answer is, this is one of those cases that might somehow never get solved. And you
$750 million is what he walked away with.
Wow. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, but just to clear your name, it's, you know, I mean, everybody suspects members of that family. It seems like, you know.
Right.
Just seems crazy. Yeah. I was just so caught up in that case. So, of course, I think it was the 20th anniversary last year, and that's why all these specials were on. Wow. And I got to tell you, it piqued my curiosity to watch some of them, but I just don't know who or what to believe. And I can't accept the fact that this will never go solved. I know there are so many unsolved murders out there for people who aren't celebrities, and it's heartbreaking nonetheless, but
this just seemed unlikely that it would go unsolved. There was too much there for them to not solve it, and somehow it wasn't solved somehow. One of the other things that we'll be covering is Cody Parkey, Bears kicker. Cody Parkey in italics.
He's infamous.
Kicker, right. He was on the Today Show today. He did an interview. We talked about yesterday. Are you tired of him?
Yeah, I just really.
He was actually, we'll run a clip in a little while. I don't think we have time to do it now.
No, we'll take a break.
All right, we'll take a break, but we'll run a clip of him from the Today Show where he explains what that moment was like.
Blah, blah, blah. I'm so over it.
Wow.
Sometimes you got to move on.
Right. But it's, you know, when it's going to be hard to move on is this weekend when they should be playing, you know, like during those 3 hours that they should be playing football and they're not playing. That's when it's going to sting a little bit.
Spoken like a true Bears fan.
Yeah, well, or somebody who knows some true Bears fans. Anyway, a break and then more show. It's Bill. It's Wendy. It's WGN. All right. This segment's going to be very. Thanks, Steve. This segment's going to be very, very fast because Wendy has pointed out that you are tired of hearing about Cody Parkey.
I thought he was a class act.
Yeah.
But I'm, you know, let's move on.
All right.
He won't be a Bear next year.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I don't think so. I don't think so. All right. So as you all know, the Bears were in a very close game with the Philadelphia Eagles last weekend. I don't want to say. I know a lot of people VCR'd it, and I don't want to say.
Although I heard John Williams yesterday saying that he watches games that have already happened. I think it was the Notre Dame game or something. And even though he knows the outcome, he'll watch
Just fast forward through it?
No.
No? Regular speed?
Yeah, which seems peculiar to me. Because he missed the action and he rewatched. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I mean, it's one thing if, like, you have DVR'd the Hawks game and somebody blows the ending.
Yeah.
Like, if you're out at the Jewel or something.
Yeah.
But you come home and still watch the game because you didn't see the game. He is rewatching a game.
You can't believe the lengths I go through to not know the results of a sporting event. Because a lot of times I'll be out doing something and the game will be on and I'll be playing tennis or whatever. And then I walk around with my ears covered and not
wear earbuds.
I have to start wearing earbuds. Sandra Bullock lent me one of her handkerchiefs. I use that as a blindfold so I don't see anything. I don't hear anything. And it works. More times than not, it works. Every once in a while, somebody will go, boy, how about that happening in the last minute of the game?
There was some, I think it was Dylan's graduation from junior high, and there was a Hawks game on. There was something going on where Jim did not want to know the outcome, and he was almost going to stay home. And I said, are you kidding me? He said, no, I'll go. But listen, I can't talk to anybody about this.
I get it.
So it was funny as we were walking out, he goes, I got a bad feeling about that guy. He's wearing a Hawks hat. I'm like, so he ran to the car.
Sometimes I can tell by my wife's body language, like I'll come home from something and she'll try to remain neutral,
right,
but I can just tell by the, because she'll overcompensate. Like she'll look overly sad when the team has won or really happy to make me believe things are good and they're not.
I always give her credit. I asked Jim, are you up to date? He's like, don't talk to me.
Right. Right.
I try to have just a very monotone, are you caught up?
That's perfect.
All right, so back to Cody Park.
Cody Park, he appeared on the Today Show today. It's the first national interview that he's done since last weekend. A lot of people were saying, wow, that's something to be on the Today Show, because this is really just a sporting event. You'd think he'd be on some ESPN show talking about missing the kick, but no, he went to the Today Show. So here's just a little bit of it from earlier this morning.
The reason you're here and the reason we're so excited to talk to you is because of the kind of person that you are and everything you did after that kick. But I have to ask you what you were thinking, you know, what in that moment and in your mind, did you know it had been tipped? Like, what was going through your mind?
No, you know, as a kicker, you know, you live for those moments. And I was, like you said, I was 3 for 3 before that. I had a lot of confidence going into that kick. So I went out there and my long snapper and holder did a great job. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I saw the wind moving a little bit. I said, all right, this is where I'm going to play it. And obviously I didn't know it was tipped or anything. I just went down and I thought I hit a pretty good kick, you know, felt good off my foot, and then looking up, and then I saw it hit the upright, and then hit the crossbar, and I'm like, surely it'll go in. unfortunately, bounced towards me, but obviously, I'm disappointed, that I let the fans, my teammates, and the whole organization down, but I'll continue to keep my head held high, because football is what I do, it's not who I am.
What do you think?
I think it was
well said,
and, you know, you gotta move on.
Sure.
I still feel bad for him. I really do.
Do you feel bad for him? Do you feel bad for the team? Do you feel bad for fandom of the Bears? Who do you feel bad for?
I feel bad for him because, I'm sorry, it happened to be the last play of the game that was botched.
Yeah.
But it's not his fault that they lost the game. They should have scored more. He got the points.
And it isn't.
He got the points on the scoreboard from previous kicks.
Absolutely, he did.
Where was, you know, a couple of touchdowns when you know you have a weakness?
Right, right, right.
Make it so the game is not going to end up on a field goal. I've said this before. He was put in a position that he was not able to deliver.
Except, no, I agree with you, except that's his path in life, is to kick in an NFL game, hopefully a playoff game, with the game on the line. And I mean, really, it is such a game of inches, just a little bit one way or a little bit the other way, and you have a different outcome, right? So I imagine, I said this on Monday, that as you're laying, if you're him and you're laying in bed on Sunday night, it's probably kind of hard to sleep because you're playing that moment over and over and over in your head. What if I had just done it just this slightly different way?
But it's not the first time he's done it.
No,
you know, if that was far. If that was like, you know, if the game ended like that, but he had been delivering all season,
right,
and his percentage was higher and everything was good, and this
right.
guy came through in a clutch all the time.
Yes.
Then I see you laying awake at night going, what in God's name happened?
Right. But for it to happen again in giant letters again, because I bet that's the word, like, everybody had a word that came out when that kick missed. His would have to be again? Like, how could that be? How could that happen to me again? How could it keep hitting the post over and over and over?
And again, we mentioned this, that he got, I don't know his exact money, but $7 million. What does he get for that?
It was between $8 and $9 million for his contract is $8 or $9 million, not for the one kicker.
So it's not, you know, like if any one of us messed up all the time. All right, well, we're not all the time. We're not back-to-back shows.
Time. Let's say most of the time.
We have a couple of good ones. All right, yeah, whatever. But seriously, if you failed to do something at
right.
work over and over again,
right.
you'd get fired, and there's no money coming in. You don't have $7 million or $9 million
to fall back on.
Right.
Wouldn't you say that this is a job? There are certain jobs that are considered specialty jobs, where you have to have, there's a special skill you have to maintain that job. And I would imagine that to be a kicker in the NFL, your specialty would be kicking that ball through the uprights. And for the most part, I mean, he got it more times than he didn't, which is great news. But when it really came down to it, he didn't get it. And I'm not just blaming him, because everything you said is true. If the team had scored another touchdown here, another touchdown there,
he wouldn't be in that position.
He would not be in that position.
He shouldn't have been put in that position. For one reason, he shouldn't have been put in that position is our offense should have played better. We should have gotten a touchdown or two.
But if you watch, and you did, I know you watched the game, the offense was good. They were not four-star,
they were not great.
Flawless, but for the most part, you know.
But they didn't score a touchdown, which is their goal.
They scored a touchdown.
Yes, but that's their goal, is to keep scoring.
Sure, of course. Yes.
The defense was great.
Right.
So it's unfortunate that it came down to Cody Parkey to either make or break the game.
Sure.
Because he's...
The scenario nobody wanted to see.
Including him!
Right. And I will give him big-time credit for doing things like this Today Show interview, because in the past, when guys have muffed a play, an important play, they've laid extremely low. They didn't want to be on the national stage talking about it. But after the game, he was there in the locker room talking to reporters, taking full blame, explaining the relationship that the team had with him, doing it in a very bold manner. And, you know, to be on the Today Show talking about it, it takes guts. So give him that.
I do, and I will, but now I got to move on.
Yes.
And it does show kids today that, you know what? Life happens, you can make a mistake, but you can survive.
You cannot succeed and still walk away with $8.5 million.
That kids don't listen to that message. He also thanked defensive end Akeem Hicks and his teammates for standing up for him after the game and on Monday when the Bears were cleaning out their lockers.
Those guys could have absolutely destroyed him. I mean, think about it. If you're that type of a guy...
Which you are.
I'm not. No, you know what? Honestly.
If you were a member of the Bears, you would not have patted him on the back and said, dude, it's okay. You would have ignored him.
I would have spent some time away from the situation.
Which would have been
honestly,
taken as, look at Bill, he's peed.
I would not have been the first guy to hug him, but now here we are 5 days later, and I would think about it and go, well, it's just a game.
Too late.
Yeah.
He needed it comforting at that moment.
Yeah.
I would have hugged him and gone, I would have been so mad at him, but I still would have hugged him and said, oh, gosh.
Wow.
Very, very
Why
Tyler
the salty
language?
That doesn't make sense. All right, we'll take a break and then we'll be back. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. If you want to reach us during the show, you can at 312-981-7200. If you want to call us there, you can. If you want to text us there, you can.
I have a text. Bill, have you been on a team? ?
Several.
It's a disappointing end, but any other error in the game may have cost them the game as well. I wouldn't want you on my team.
No.
And that's why you're better off playing tennis singles. I know you play doubles, but there's only one other person to deal with.
Well, right. That did happen with your tennis team, right? You went to the...
Yes, and
Midwest
he grew up a little
something.
Bit.
Yeah.
Remember, Bertrand, you were some guy it cost cost the tournament, and you were cool to him, weren't you?
Well, eventually. It did cost the tournament. There was a guy. No, right away. There was a guy who beat me. This is when the team went to state a couple years ago, and there was a guy who beat me. And I said afterwards,
"Oh, right."
I always when somebody beats me, I always congratulate them. Always. I take that back. There have been one or two times where I have played a guy that was just so obnoxious that even though he won, that I refused to congratulate him. But in this particular instance, the guy who beat me. I was incredibly congratulatory.
All right, that's a different situation, Steve, because if you were playing doubles with somebody and your partner on the court just totally messed something up.
Yes.
Well, wasn't there, with your team, though, that you were the only winner?
There was one match where I mean, that stuff like that happens.
Toot, yeah. Toot.
I can hear that.
Oh, I'm right here. I'm sorry.
I hear that noise. I hear you tooting during the show, Wendy.
No, but I meant that you were gracious about the others.
Of course. Yeah. Of course.
The losers.
Yes.
Well, because he wants to keep playing with that league.
Yeah.
You have grown up a little, but you're a sore loser.
No, it's not that I'm a sore loser. I don't like to lose.
Well, no one does.
I really don't like to lose.
Losing makes you stronger.
I don't really mind losing.
You're okay with losing?
Steve, what are you, Eeyore?
Oh, well.
Well, you know. Someone's got to lose. It might as well be me.
That's why I could never, you know, my wife plays paddle all the time. And yes. Talking strategy, and you're talking tennis strategy. I'm like, you know, I don't care that much.
Is that true? Yeah.
I think I might be competitive in other ways, but not with games.
Oh. No.
Having lost the majority of them in my life.
Back to Cody Parkey. What if you were an undertaker and missed the hole?
Yeah,
that'd be a problem.
It would be a horrible problem. Your business would go belly up in no time. That's awful.
Don't say belly up.
No.
And there's another thing that comes up every time we talk about this.
My lunch.
about weather forecasters, meteorologists, how can they be wrong all the time and go home and sleep at night? But weather patterns change. That can change on a dime.
But I always maintain that the reason on the weather they talk so much about what already happened is they're guaranteed to get that part right. Like a weathercaster always goes, here's what happened today, and then they show you like hour by hour what the temperatures were, because they're going to nail that. That happened already. The rest is just guesswork. I mean, not just guesswork.
Well, no, it isn't.
There's machines and stuff.
Get Skilling on the phone, Jasmine. It is not guesswork.
But you know how every once in a while they'll talk about a snowstorm? They'll go, oh, this is going to be brutal.
Because that's what the weather forecast is saying.
Right.
And of course, conditions can change.
Right.
I'm willing to give them a pass.
Only because we know Tom Skilling. And you don't want the wrath of Skilling on you.
No, I don't. And
no,
someone said, what sport did I play? In junior high,
basketball.
Did track and volleyball. And in high school, strictly basketball. I've been a team player. I have always supported people that make mistakes. Because you know what? I wasn't perfect and I made mistakes.
Right.
It's a team.
Wendy, I've not only supported people who've made mistakes, I have bet a lot of money on teams that have made mistakes. Lots of money. That's why I don't gamble anymore. Did you notice something different about the building today, by the way? This building that we work in?
Oh, it's sad.
It's very sad.
I know.
Wait, Jazz, not
why
yet.
Why am
Let's
I
see.
So unobservant?
Wendy, you got to open
Come
your
on,
eyes.
Wendy.
Judy Pilak's not here anymore?
Well, that's
No, we said sad.
Wow.
Bertrand.
Wow, could you hand me the Bectine that's right over there, Wendy, please?
Just kidding.
Could you hand me that?
I was texting with her last night.
Oh, right.
Did the words good and riddance come next
to No. Actually, we're texting about the Jamie Clough story.
Oh, were you? Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh.
See,
oh.
She cannot shut it down.
No.
I knew it.
Once news is in your blood, it's
All
in your blood.
All right, well, give me a hint.
Something different about this building as of today. You didn't notice?
I'm glad you brought this up. Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome. And it's sad. It's sad.
Thanks, Bill.
You're welcome.
Tanks. I don't get it.
You know the army tanks that are always in front of this building?
No.
What does the word tanks have to do with the building that we work in?
Not toilet.
I don't know where I am.
Nothing?
No.
You know those gigantic aquariums?
Oh, no!
Aquaria?
Yeah.
What is more than one aquarium called? An aquaria? Huh? I don't know what it's called.
Aquariosity.
Two aquariums.
They're gone?
No, they're still there. But
the water's gone.
The water's gone. The
fish
are gone.
The dead fish are on the bottom of the tank.
You didn't notice any?
What? I guess I didn't look at it today.
They are moving. For people who have never been to this building, which I'm guessing is most of you, they have these two stunning, gigantic, just beautiful aquariums.
Like the mini shed aquarium right in our own lobby.
Well, they said the fish, they moved them to the shed.
Yeah, they said that they've moved to a better place.
Can you tell the story in order so I know what's happening?
Every day when I come in, and I assumed you too, I think most of us, you marvel at these beautiful, I keep saying aquariums because I think that's the right word for more than one aquarium. Yes. But somebody's going to call up and go, no, it's aquaria.
Oh, my God. Will you tell me the story? Right.
So you see these things. Just stunning fish. Stunning. It looks like you're at the bottom of the sea. I feel like Mike Nelson on Sea Hunt every time I walk through there.
Okay.
And on Tuesdays, I always take a little extra time because they're cleaning them. And every once in a while, I'll even talk to the people cleaning them. And I'll just go, what kind of fish is that? Because they're beautiful. They're stunning, right?
It's only Tuesdays they clean it?
Yeah. They would come in on Tuesdays.
Boy, I don't notice any of this stuff.
No, I didn't know that.
I see a person there every once in a while cleaning, frequently.
It's always a Tuesday.
I never look at them anyway.
You don't, Steve, really? They're so pretty. Yeah.
Okay, so pretty.
So today, as I was walking past, I noticed the first aquarium is empty.
No water in it?
Well, in the past couple weeks, I've noticed that the seascape that is inside the aquarium was being lessened and lessened. Like there was less plants and less
gravel. Just thought the fish were getting older and downsizing.
The kids went to a new school.
Yeah. Oh.
Went away to school. Oh,
thank you, Mrs. Maisel. So in the last couple of weeks when I walk by, I look at it and I go, well, this is odd. There's less stuff in the aquarium, less fish, less everything. And then today, the first aquarium empty. And then the second aquarium, even more empty. And then a sign saying, we've gone to a better place, which is sad.
That means dead.
They're both empty now.
They're both empty. And it says that they are now at the Shedd Aquarium, that if you want to see these fish.
I'm not going
to
go visit
them. That's where they.
Do you really believe that?
Owe it to them. No.
They went to a farm.
It's when your dog dies and your parents tell you it's on a farm somewhere in downstate Illinois.
But they said they're improving the space down there, and they said as part of our improvement of the space,
right?
That's pretty cool. I mean, what can you do to improve by removing fish tanks?
I don't know.
Putting a champagne fountain.
Yes.
That would be an improvement.
That'd be great.
Just on the second floor. There's an aquarium there. Is that gone too?
I don't know the answer to that. These were gigantic
pretty
and beautiful.
Big. A body could fit in there.
What are you inferring?
Nothing.
Nothing. All right.
I got video of it on our Instagram, Bill and Wendy Show, if you guys want to take
a look
at it.
Oh, thank you, Jasmine. Were you also sad by this?
I was sad. Saddened? That's why I put it on there. I was
sad.
Just heartbroken.
You would have noticed eventually.
It's good that you follow the Instagram feed, Wendy.
When did you put it up there?
When I got in, 8:30.
Yeah,
I haven't looked at it yet. I looked at it last night.
All right. So there it is. There's all the sadness of what's going on in the building. I'm sorry to break the news to you.
I wish I could have said goodbye.
Right. Would you have?
You speak fish?
You do an impression of fish, of Abe Vigoda.
Come on, show us.
Bernice.
That's beautiful. All right, we'll take a break. We've got news coming up next, but first.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Mr. Steve Bertrand. It's all happening in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and it's next here on WGN.
Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill Leffman. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zalbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com, a great website if you like TV and entertainment. Alex, a quick question. The Golden Globes were Sunday. Now, with the Academy Awards, and to some respect, the Golden Globes, when a movie wins, it usually means a spike in business. People see it's winning awards. Mm-hmm. They go to see the movie. Does that translate to television?
That's an interesting question. I think it certainly does, and I can say based on the fact that the Kominsky Method took home a bunch of awards at the Golden Globes for Netflix, and everybody was tweeting, wait, what's the Kominsky Method now? What is the show?
Yeah.
Certainly that's going to drive a lot of interest there. Now, we don't get stats necessarily back from Netflix. They're very secretive about that stuff. But just given the fact that it raised the profile of that show exponentially, I'm sure more people watched it.
Interesting. All right.
I never heard of it. I really didn't.
I keep seeing clips for it. And Alex, you tell us, because I honestly don't know. The clips don't make the show look very good, but people who do watch the show tend to like it. Where do you stand on it?
Our critics who saw it over here at Decider liked it fine. It's nothing that's going to blow your mind, but it's Michael Douglas, it's Alan Arkin. They're both very good. And, you know, they're older actors that are very much still at the top of their game. It's from Chuck Lorre, and he's pretty reliable behind the scenes. So it's a solid show. Everybody was surprised that it won that many Golden Globes. There are much better shows out there, but it's definitely not a waste of your time.
All right, that's fair. Please start out with a show called The Passage. I've been seeing clips for this for the last couple of weeks. It looks like it's right up my alley, but I know you're going to tell me some bad news.
Well, it's not totally bad news. It comes to Fox on Monday at 9 p.m. It's based on a best-selling book series. There are a lot of insane twists and turns that happen in the book. The first episode, at least, is much slower than that. It takes place in a world where vampire-ish creatures sort of exist. It stars Mark Paul Gosselaar from Saved by the Bell. He's been in a bunch of stuff since, but I think he'll always be identified with that.
Yeah.
As the hero of the story, he's an agent working for the secret government agency that's experimenting with a vampire virus, and he essentially kidnaps a young girl in order to bring her back to this organization so they can experiment on her and make some different choices along the way. Now, I did not love the pilot, to be perfectly honest with you, but the effects are very creepy, the vampires are crazy, and it's very, without spoiling too much, the people they experiment on before the little girl are some of the worst of the worst. So if white supremacist vampire is your jam, you yes. might be into the show.
All right. Is the audience for this, is it Walking Dead fans, would you say? Who's the audience for this?
Lost fans, you know, Henry Arian Cusack, I was about to say Desmond from Lost, is one of the major actors. And if he shows up at a show, you know, there's going to be long-standing mysteries.
Yeah.
But also, if you like Manifest that debuted on NBC,
I love that show.
Yeah, it's going for the same sort of thing as that. It's like the new Lost, in a way, these second generations of shows who are playing off of that.
Can I tell you something about Manifest, and it irritates me? I think the acting is terrible. Mm. I really think they're just not very good actors. Mm-hmm. The brother, the sister, the wife. But I like the show, and I like the concept, and I keep watching it.
That's how I get you. You know, I think all of the actors on Manifest have probably been in better things and done better work elsewhere. But if the mystery gets you, the mystery gets you. And clearly Manifest has done a good job of that.
We've been looking for a new Lost since Lost went off the air. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. And I have a bunch of theories about that are probably too long for this radio program today. But the main thing I would say is I think mostly people took the wrong lessons from Lost, and the things that Lost was actually good at was creating deep emotional connections between the characters.
Yeah.
That's why you had so many hugs and reunions and slow-mo songs on the beach. And that's what people really hooked into. That's what made that show work. Not the mysteries, not the expanded cast never being in the same place at the same time. While those latter things, I think, are the things that most shows have taken from it.
You know, the other thing that was so strong on Lost that other shows just can't seem to capture is those episodes where there's a backstory kind of interwoven with modern day. They were just great at that, you know?
Yeah, and a lot of shows have taken that as well, mixing the timelines. But it always, to me, feels a little derivative of Lost versus feeling like a central backstory in any particular way.
Yeah.
4, 8, 15.
The numbers.
16,
Wendy remembers the numbers. How
42.
About that?
I had to look them up.
How about that? All right. So let's go talk about the history of True Detective over on HBO. First season, incredibly good. Second season, not incredibly good. Third season, about to start. What will happen?
Well, I've seen the first couple of episodes of the next season of True Detective. It debuts Sunday night at 9 p.m. on HBO. It stars Mahershala Ali, I always pronounce his name incorrectly, who you've probably seen in Moonlight. He's also in Green Book, which is currently in theaters and winning all those awards, as well as Stephen Dorff, Scoop Mary, Mamie Gummer, and a bunch of other people. The cast is phenomenal. It definitely, to me, my opinion, feels like a do-over for the mistakes of season two.
Oh.
There's a lot of themes and ideas and shots and things that are redone from the first season. So the way one of our reviewers is actually going up on the site shortly, Kayla Cobb put it, is she felt like if the first season of True Detective never existed, this season would be great.
Oh.
But comparing it, it's not quite as good. That said, Ali is superb in it.
Yeah,
so
he's a great actor.
For nothing else, check it out for his performance.
And for people who aren't familiar with the series, every season is an entirely new cast and a new storyline. So if you haven't seen seasons one and seasons two, you can certainly jump on at the very beginning of this one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd say in particular, the first two episodes are directed by a guy named Jeremy Saulnier, who directed a movie called Green Room and a couple of other things. They're very well directed and very well acted. So if you're looking for something that's almost more of a character study than a true crime mystery, definitely worth checking out.
Alexander Zelbin's our guest, the managing editor over at Decider.com. We'll take a quick break and then talk more TV with him next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Still up, and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Alexander Zelbin. He's the managing editor of Decider.com. If you're a TV fan, that's the website for you, Decider.com. It's that simple. Alex, we've gotten several phone calls about a television show, and Wendy, it's one of your favorite shows, isn't it?
It's called Better Things, and it's on the FX network, and it's Pamela Adlon, who is the voiceover actress for Bobby Hill. And I love this show more than anything. I can't even remember how many seasons. I just know that I haven't seen it in a while, and listeners and I want to know if it's coming back.
Well, that's actually a very big question right now, because Louis C.K. was one of the co-creators and producers behind the scene. As many people probably know, he was embroiled in a pretty big Me Too scandal of his own. He's been doing some stand-up things here and there, but Pamela Adlon recently said behind the scenes that is part of the holdup. She feels very conflicted about the series going forward, and it's completely her, from starring to creation to writing to everything. So you can definitely check out the first two seasons on FX Plus, which is FX's streaming service. But honestly, I don't know at this point if it will ever come back. We'll have to see.
Sorry, Wendy.
That and The Mick, two of my favorite shows with great, strong women actors, and Dunsky.
And That Girl also, yeah. No longer on TV. Love That Girl. What about this? Netflix has a film starting, I think, today called The Last Laugh. Is it starting today, Alex?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah,
love the cast. Love the premise.
Just today, it stars Richard Dreyfuss and also Chevy Chase, Andy McDowell, Kate McCucci. I believe Chris Parnell is in it as well. And it's about a retired aging comedian who goes on one last stand-up tour. And based on the lineup and the title and everything, you can kind of get exactly what it is. According to reviewers, Richard Dreyfuss is pretty good in it. Chevy Chase is late career Chevy Chase at this point. So if you're looking for something that isn't going to tax you too much tonight, that's definitely one to check out.
Which one of them, Chevy Chase or Richard Dreyfuss, plays the comic going on this last tour?
Oh, I believe Chevy Chase is the comic, and Richard Dreyfuss is his manager.
Oh. And wasn't Chevy just in the news that he's just, who was he complaining about? The current SNL cast?
Yeah, he said the show's not funny anymore.
Crotchety and terrible. Does he demonstrate some of that behavior in this?
He's kind of just sort of doing his thing at this point, showing up to set, reading the lines, and that's pretty much it.
That's unfortunate. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was so good.
What happened, do you think, Alex? What's your theory? Because over the years, I've talked to so many people who have worked with him, and I always get the same story, never again. What do you hear?
Yeah.
What happened?
I mean, that's been the thing all along. If you read any of the behind-the-scenes SNL stuff, he was always so sure of his own stardom and sure of his own genius.
Yeah.
And eventually, he just didn't keep up with the times. I think a lot of the comedians who do stay relevant actually have a little bit of unsurety about themselves.
Sure.
Do not think they're brilliant, so that they keep pushing and pushing and pushing and trying to learn, and that's just not what Chevy Chase did.
But he had such great success as Clark Griswold, and I mean, really, that
Fletch.
Was... Yes, I mean, yeah. He was able to do wonderful things after SNL, and then I thought he'd do it forever.
He tanked most of his relationships. He spent a lot of time trashing people. He wasn't good to have on set. If you read any of the behind-the-scenes things on Community, he was a nightmare to work with, to the point where they killed off his character. We recently published, over the holidays, an oral history of one of the Community Christmas episodes, and it was a stop-motion episode. They only had one shot of the cast that was live action, and his character was supposed to be not wearing socks in the shot because he had broken his leg, and he just refused. So if you ever watch it, his stop motion figure doesn't actually match up to his live action figure just because Chevy Chase was a jerk about it.
You have been instrumental in, I always loved TV, but I got sick of it. I didn't know what to watch. And you had mentioned The Haunting of Hill House. Bill, you enjoyed that too.
Yeah.
And then Bill, you and Alexander said you guys are going to love that S Creek that's on
Eugene
Netflix.
Levy's show.
With Catherine O'Hara, who is the most underrated, funniest person ever.
Mm-hmm.
That show is the greatest show I've ever seen in my life. I'm only on season one at the tail end, so I have lots of binging to do, and I'm looking so forward to it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy how that one is built, because it's on a smaller channel. It really flew under the radar for the first season or two, but it's felt like in the past season or so, it just kind of caught on fire. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you can stream it on Netflix, so you can go back and check out all the seasons. It's fantastic. It's a great cast, and I'm glad more people are watching it.
They use a lot of former SCTV and Second City people, and almost everybody in the cast, I think except Chris Elliott, is Canadian, but they just have built this great core of characters. That,
and his two kids are on it.
Yeah, both his son and daughter play roles on the show.
Oh,
Eugene
I love
Levy's
it.
Kids. Yeah,
so funny.
Yeah, really good show.
Thank you both of you for turning me
course,
on to that.
Of course, of course. What yeah. about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend? We're going to get the last few episodes of that show. Hi, Alex.
Yeah, I love this show. It is the CW's musical romantic comedy, and it's entering its last couple of episodes starting tonight at 9 p.m. on the CW. It's not to use the title, but it's crazy, it's funny, it's romantic, and it's the one show that over the course of, I think this is the fourth season, shown actual real character growth. It's gone from the titular crazy ex-girlfriend to let her grow and change and become a real person, and it's a very impressive feat, so I do hope people check out the last couple of episodes.
Gillian Anderson is back on television. That's good news, I think.
It's great news, because this series is so much fun, but definitely not safe for work. It dropped on Netflix today. It's called Sex Education, and it actually co-stars Asa Butterfield, who people might know from the not-so-great Ender's Game movie, among other things, as the son of a sex therapist, who's Gillian Anderson, and he and a couple of his high school friends team up to form an underground sex therapy clinic. So there is a lot of sex talk. There is nudity in the show. Just be warned about that going right in. But it's very funny. It's very sweet. It's like a much sexier Wonder Years.
Oh. It's
all
about
right.
time there was a sexier Wonder Years. Good, finally.
Everyone's talking about Lifetime surviving R. Kelly, which I have not seen yet. There's an encore presentation tonight. A marathon?
Yeah, it's running pretty much nonstop on Lifetime, because it was an enormous hit, but it's also been an enormous cultural change as well. They've opened cases looking into R. Kelly. Lady Gaga, who did a single with him, came out and posted a statement about it yesterday, saying the single that they had done together, she was pulling offline. It's a hard watch. If you're looking for something just relax with tonight, do not watch Surviving R. Kelly. But if you want to know more about this case and exactly what's going on, it's something that people have been talking about for years, and it's finally all out there.
And, Alex, I don't even know if you're aware of this. I just saw this story this morning. There are some parallels to R. Kelly's case and Michael Jackson's case. So I kept thinking to myself, I wonder why we're not seeing a Michael Jackson version of this. Well, over in England, their Channel 4 put together a documentary called Leaving Neverland, and apparently that's going to air on HBO. Do you already know this?
I didn't know about it airing on HBO, and I think that is going to make an impact in a similar way. Certainly the R. Kelly thing seems more pressing, because, not to be too grim about it, he's still alive and out there, and I think people want to warn people about him. It'll be interesting to see what happens to Michael Jackson's legacy after that airs here.
Doesn't this really prove, though, the power of television? These R. Kelly allegations have been going on for over a decade, and everyone was just not doing anything about it, and then all of a sudden, because of this TV show, everybody's jumping and doing something.
Yeah, you know, there's something very disposable about Twitter, despite the fact that there's been tons of Twitter threads and tons of tweets and tons of people talking about this. There's even been major articles about the R. Kelly thing that have been released and interviews that have been done, but it really was not until this that it felt like there was some sort of movement against him.
Yep.
Do I waste my time on Lindsay Lohan's Beach Club on MTV?
I mean, you will be wasting your time, sure. You know, one of our writers, Leah, really enjoys reality shows like that. And she said it's not quite as good as a Vanderpump Rules, if you're into that. But it's not terrible. You know, it's fun. It's fine. It's what you think it is. And Lindsay Lohan doesn't show up that much, but it's a bunch of hot people carousing on the beach. So there
you go.
What
else do you want?
And I have a really quick tip for people who are clutterers like myself. Marie Kondo has a Netflix series that I binge watch. There's only, I think, 8 of them. And it's called Tidying Up. And that you can read about on Decider.com, too. It hopefully this weekend will have changed my life. I don't know yet.
Sure.
I have her book, but it's better to see it in action.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Hopefully it sparks your joy.
Alex, give me your thoughts on this. Sometimes when a show switches networks, it's not quite as good. It's like when a restaurant switches locations and you go there and you go, yeah, the lasagna is not as good as it used to be. I watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine last night, and it was better than it used to be. How did that happen?
They just stuck with what they were doing, which was everything good. You know, they were pretty open about that. They said they're not looking to change anything. They're not trying to tweak anything going into the next season. It was already a hilariously funny show with an amazing cast. Just they kept on trucking with it, and I think they knew they needed to come out strong with the season premiere because of all the hype about it. So that probably helped add them up. And the great news is it actually worked in terms of the ratings.
Good.
Got its biggest ratings in 2 years for last night's episode.
You know, I always, there's a thing that I call 30 Rock Syndrome, and that's a sitcom that packs in so many jokes that you don't even absorb them upon first watching. You almost have to watch it a second time to get everything that's been thrown at you. That was how last night's Brooklyn Nine-Nine was.
Yeah, it's great. The writing is great. The performances are great. If you have never checked it out, I think, you know, there's light plots and stuff that goes on, but you can really jump in with this new season and be absolutely fine. And I'm just so glad more people are discovering it.
Me too. Me too. Alex, always fun to talk to you. Hope you have a great weekend, and we'll check in 7 days.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Absolutely.
Thank
Alexander
you.
Zelbin, he's the managing editor of Decider.com. Great stories about your favorite and your least favorite television shows.
News time right now, and this is brought to you. Oh, we're going to talk to Rick Steves about the travel show that he's going to be appearing at this weekend. And we've got a lot to talk to him about. We were supposed to talk to him yesterday, but he's coming up after the news.
I'm a traveling.
He is a traveling man whom we were supposed to speak to yesterday. A lot of disappointed listeners going, where was Rick Steves? Where was he?
Steve Bertrand stole him from us, Wendy.
He only got him for a little while,
right,
though, a few
right.
minutes. Travel writer, host of Rick Steves Europe and Travel with Rick Steves, ricksteves.com. He's going to be in town this Saturday. Rick, finally great to talk to you.
Nice to be with you, too. Thanks for calling me.
All right. Everybody in the world is so excited about you and your travel journeys. I am not a big traveler. Where should I start? How do I like to? I mean, I really just don't travel that much, and I want. It seems more of a hassle to me. I like it when I'm there, but it's a hassle getting ready.
Well, that's a very good concern. You know, I've been. I wrote my first book in 1980, so I've been at this for a long time. And a lot of people don't get around to traveling until later in their life. People have kind of a stage of their life a lot of times where they have the freedom and the money and the interest of traveling. And if you want to do it, my sort of mission, and I work with 100 people here in Seattle, and we've had the same mission for decades, is just to inspire Americans to venture beyond Orlando. A lot of people travel is Orlando, you know, and,
right.
and that's... That's fun, but after 3 or 4 trips to that kind of la-la land travel, there's a real world out there. And to me, that's more important than ever these days. It's more enticing than ever. There's a real world out there. We are 96% of humanity here in the United States. We think the world's a pyramid with us on top a lot of times and everybody trying to figure it out. But really, the world is an exciting playground, and the world is filled with joy and love. It's all sorts of exciting things happen, and it can be a celebration. Or you can have a mindset where you're afraid of it and you just, you know, feel like, why should I go out there? But, you know, I've spent 4 months a year every year for the last 30 years traveling outside of the United States, and I just love it. So this is what I do, is I try to help people like you
yeah.
who maybe think it's a lot of sort of a big chore to go over there. For me, it's you know, when you get your sea legs or whatever you'd want to call it, yeah, you got to sit on an airplane for a while. But I just think it's the most exciting way you could spend your extra time and money is to get out of your comfort zone and gain an empathy for the people who live outside of our country, and then to come home and we have a broader perspective.
That's people a good way always to put say it. When you go overseas, you travel overseas, it makes you respect America more. You understand what you're living through here more. Is that true for you, do you think, or not?
You know, I've been thinking about that a lot lately. In fact, one of the talks I'm giving tomorrow at the Chicago Travel Show is called Travel as a Political Act, and how travel impacts us in our outlook. And I find in a lot of ways, Bill, that when I leave our country and look at it from a distance, I learn more about our country by looking at it from afar. I also recognize how blessed we are and what we have to take care of. And when I come home, I'm more thankful than ever to be living here in the United States. But I also realize that we've got challenges, and other countries have similar challenges, and it makes sense to compare notes and not let commercial news shape our world outlook, and not let people that want us to be afraid and with the bunker mentality to make us frightened people. You know, a long time ago, people used to say bon voyage, mm-hmm. and now people say have a safe trip. I really don't know where that came from. When somebody tells me have a safe trip, I'm inclined to say, well, you have a safe stay at home, because where I'm going, you know, statistically, and I know statistics are optional these days, but statistically, where I'm going is safer than where you're staying, especially if you live in a big city in the United States. So, you know, if you care about your children and you understand the statistics, you should take them to Europe tomorrow.
Yep.
You know, you mentioned, Rick, about getting out of your comfort zone and experiencing the big world that's around us. That is really what it is. You don't know what to expect. I see a lot of people on social media who go to Iceland. What's the big deal with Iceland where everyone's going there now?
I don't know. I was just there myself, and we just wrote a book about it, and it's one of our best-selling books right out of the starting gate. And there's something intriguing about Iceland. There's a lot of popular media that stokes people's interest in things, if it's Harry Potter or if it's Game of Thrones or something like that. And a lot of filming goes on in Iceland that gets people this romantic notion about it. But Iceland is just dramatic scenery. It's where the tectonic plates of Europe and America come together. So it's you can kind of straddle America and Europe right there in Iceland. And I just found it intriguing. But part of it is it's just a latecomer to the European travel scene. So a lot of people are looking for something fresh and new. But fresh and new is also Sicily. It's Turkey. It's Poland. It's Portugal. There's so many exciting dimensions to European travel these days. One thing that's interesting for me, I just focus on Europe. You know, my company is Europe Through the Back Door, and I look at Europe as the waiting pool for world exploration. And as I said, I've been going there 4 months a year for over 30 years, and it just doesn't get old. I used to get frustrated because I couldn't see everything on one trip, and now I'm realizing I'm really thankful that I'm going back for many trips, and I always seem to have more things I want to see and experience when I fly home than when I left, because I'm learning what these countries have to offer. And it's kind of humbling. It's inspiring. You meet people that see things differently. But, you know, the bottom line is, for a lot of people, it's just how do you do it, and how do you get the most value out of your time, and how do you save money? And I would say one thing that's interesting to remember is that time is a valuable resource, and we Americans have the shortest vacation in the rich world. So we have to be smart about our time as well as our money. When Arthur Frommer started all of this, popularization of travel among commoners, the book was Europe on $5 a Day, and the focus was saving your money. My first books were books called Germany in 22 Days or Britain in 22 Days or France in 22 Days, and my focus was on using your time smartly. You got to use your money smartly and your time smartly, and these days there's a lot of people traveling because you have emerging economies like India and China with middle classes of about 100 million people who can afford to go to Europe now, and they've always dreamed of going to the Eiffel Tower, and they've always dreamed of seeing Michelangelo's David, and they've always dreamed of going to Anne Frank's house, and those places are going to be very crowded. But that really doesn't matter. I mean, it's a beautiful thing now that so many people are shuffling through the Hall of Mirrors at the Versailles Palace, and it's frustrating for a lot of Americans that think it should just be their private little vacation domain.
Yeah.
But there's 95% of Europe that never has any crowds anyways, so it's just I think it's a great time to travel. I can honestly say it's never been safer or more efficient to travel than it is right now. A lot of people that don't know how to travel complain about things. A lot of people that don't understand the statistics and look at one-off headlines think it's more dangerous to travel. But statistically, it's safe and it's so efficient. You can go from Big Ben to the Eiffel Tower in 2.5 hours, 17 minutes under the English Channel Tunnel. It's in a luxurious sort of comfort compared to the old days when you had to get off the train and get onto the boat and get sniffed by dogs and then get onto the train again and hope you get to Paris that same day.
Rick, what do you say to people who say, I want to travel to other countries, I want to go to Denmark, I want to go to Japan, but I don't speak the language? What's your advice to them?
Well, they should talk to a guy named Rick Steves, because for 40 years he's been teaching that you don't need to speak the languages, and he validates that by reminding people he only speaks English. It's nothing to brag about, but I'm like my students. I'm the typical monoglot American. I speak English, I speak it well, and I'm thankful that we speak the world's linguistic common denominator. I'm able to organize my tours and write my guidebooks and produce my TV shows speaking English. It's, you know, my kids speak foreign languages, and I'm jealous because they get a tighter connection. But I'm a generalist. I travel all over Europe, and I just can't keep the languages straight. And what I think about is not how to learn a few more verbs in French, but how to communicate in what the Voice of America calls simple English. No contractions, no slang, internationally understood words. Enunciating very clearly, assuming my European friend is reading my lips, wishing it was written down, hoping to see every letter as it tumbles out of my mouth. I speak this way almost robotically for 4 months out of every year, and it really helps. But these are the kind of things I talk about in my lectures that I'm going to be giving at the Chicago Travel Show Saturday and Sunday, and this is the sort of spirit of smart travel that I focus on in my guidebooks.
And speaking of your tours, we have a listener, Dan, who has called in. Dan, you went on one of Rick Steves' tours. Loved it, didn't you?
It was our first Rick Steves tour. It was in October to three cities in Italy, and it was just absolutely outstanding. Italy has been on my wife's bucket list for 50 years, and she said this met every expectation she could have imagined.
Dan, thank you. That was the Venice, Florence, Rome tour. That's one of our most popular itineraries out of the 30 or 40 tours itineraries that we do, and that's probably the most
exciting
punch. I'm sorry?
Yes. Roseanne was our tour guide, and she was fantastic. And everybody, Roseanne, she picked up all the tour guides at each city were just outstanding.
You know,
we would meet other people who were there on their own, and many of them had your book. But the fidelity and the richness we got being with Roseanne and another group who encouraged us after the formal tours were over, like at lunch or 2 o'clock, go meet the people.
Yeah. Well, Dan, that's the philosophy of our travel. It's, meeting people is what carbonates the experience. You can see all sorts of tired cultural cliches on stage and go home with all those kind of images. But really, to actually get out there and get to know locals, it really makes the trip much more vivid and memorable, doesn't it?
Thank you for calling,
so
Dan.
So.
We appreciate it.
Thank you, Rick. Bye.
Yeah, that's Dan's commenting on the fact that our tours have guides that connect our groups with local guides. And that's something that, there's so many passionate local teachers that are in each town. And when I go to Europe on my own, I'm generally hiring private guides as I go. And we make sure the favorite guides of mine get to work with our groups as they travel around Europe. For independent type travelers, we write the guidebooks, and for people that want to have somebody else do the driving and arrange the hotels and make sure the guides you have are really good, we put our tour program together. And then for those who just want to sit at home on the couch and dream about it, we make our TV shows on public television.
Rick, I don't know if this is a tough question or an easy question, but in your opinion, give us the most overrated travel destination in Europe and the most underrated travel destination in Europe.
Oh, that's a good question. The most overrated site in Europe. It's probably important for travelers to remember there's a lot of commercial ventures that have box offices on the main drag right next to Hooters, and right next to the Hard Rock Cafe, where it looks like this is a great cultural place to go, but it's a commercial venture, a Madame Tussauds wax gallery, a torture dungeon, a Leonardo da Vinci exhibit with all of his experiments or something. And these are basically kits you can buy and put up and make money selling them to tours. I think the underrated sites are places that have no promotional budgets, places that are cultural treasures that would resonate with you. A real important thing is to know what are you interested in. If you're interested in World War One history, do some studying. Know where you want to go. It's the 100th anniversary of the end of World War One now, and it's an exciting time to be there with that sort of theme. If you're interested in whatever, if you're interested in leprosy, there's an amazing museum by a guy named Dr. Hansen, who was the original sort of discoverer and expert on leprosy, which became known as Hansen's disease in Bergen, Norway. You know, you would know that. If you're interested in art done by people who were locked up because they were criminally insane or mm-hmm. considered criminally insane, there's a fascinating art gallery in southern Switzerland, in Lausanne, that you just got to see. And while you're there, if you like the Olympics, that's where the Olympics Museum is. So if you're interested in chocolate, if you're interested in the Beatles, if you're interested in tattoos, if you're interested in Monet, if you're interested in, ABBA, whatever you're interested in, there's a museum for you, and I really enjoy the preparation and then the challenge of putting that itinerary together so you use your time most smartly. The trip that Dan was just on, who called, was Venice, Florence, and Rome in 10 days. 3 nights in Venice, 3 nights in Florence, 3 nights in Rome, with a 3-hour bus ride or train ride if you're on your own, doing it, connecting those. Now, to put that tour together on your own without us, I mean, our guidebooks are designed so people can do our tours without us. This is a very good example. You got 10 days for your vacation. You want to see the greatest, most intense Italy, urban Italy, cultural art experience, and so on. Fly into Venice, fly out of Rome, get 3 hotels, Venice, Florence, Rome. You buy your train ticket between each. It's very simple. You can do that over there. And then you've got the parameters all set. You got your flight in, your flight out, open jaws into one city, out of the other city, 2 connections by train, which you don't worry about it. You can get that over there. You got your 3 hotel reservations. Now you've got those beautiful blocks, 2 undivided days and 3 nights in each city. Mm-hmm. And you've got to decide, how are you going to organize those days? What days are the museums closed? Do you want to hire a private guide? Are you going to make a reservation for a special dinner? You know, there's plenty of things you can do, and that's your fun challenge. And then you put together the most beautiful 10 days that Italy has to offer.
Well, you make it sound so easy and taking the stress out of it by planning what you want to do. I mean, it's a big world out there, and we learn a lot about history by going to other countries. My grandfather was born in Malvina, which is right near Venice. I would love to see that someday. Mm.
Well, you could do that very easily, and it's a lot better organized now than it was in the old days. I mean, in a lot of Europe, you've got Airbnb, you've got Uber, you've got TripAdvisor, you've got all sorts of crowdsourcing sites that can help out. The guidebooks, whether they're mine or other guidebooks, are just more helpful and better designed than ever. And history, as you mentioned, Wendy, is speaking to us. I just made a 1-hour special that's airing all over the country about the history of fascism on my public television show. And European fascism back 80 years ago really is an amazing story. And when you think of the populists and the fear-mongering and the angry movements that are going around all over Western democracies today, they had their parallels 100 years ago. And you can learn about that through your travels. And that's something that I think is more important than ever, that we recognize that, we're all players in this amazing story, and it's history is unfolding all around us. And it's just, I think, really exciting to get over there and get to know the world.
Rick, if I do go to the Leprosy Museum, what will they sell me in the gift shop?
Oh, that's I was so shooken up I didn't even make it to the gift shop.
But
I will to give you a little practical tip. When you go to a fancy museum like that in Scandinavia, it comes with a guided tour. You've just got to let the docents there know that you don't speak Norwegian and you'd like some help. And they literally walk you around and give you just a very caring look.
Oh, nice. At
whether it's leprosy or ABBA, it depends on what you want to see in Scandinavia.
All right.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. Go to ricksteves.com to find out about his books, his TV shows. He's on social media. And please go see him at the Chicago Travel and Adventure Show. It's happening Saturday and Sunday. Donald D. Stevens Convention Center in Rosemont. You can go to travelshows.com. Thank you so much. Great to talk to you again.
Good talking to you. Happy travels.
Thank you, Rick. Rick Steves, everybody. We'll take a little break, and then more of us, Bill and Wendy on WGN.